Hello, everyone. Welcome to the May edition of the Entrepreneurial Strategy Series. My name is David Pastalski. I am an intellectual property attorney. I'm a registered patent attorney in the United States. My background is in chemistry and computer science. And I've kind of devoted my life to startups, entrepreneurs, and emerging companies for the last 11 out of my 20-year career. And part of me giving back is having these informational sessions, these what I call them education and empowerment. We've been doing the Entrepreneurial Strategy Series for about 4 years now. It's usually the last Thursday of every month at this time. And so if there's a particular topic that you maybe want us to explore, let us know, and we'd be happy to put on a session. I'm super excited about today, specifically because of Peter, who I'm going to have him introduce himself in a minute. I've known Peter for a while, and he brought this idea, I mean, did by artificial intelligence. We at the firm use it as well for organizational purposes and stuff. But Peter kind of brought up this this topic to say, hey, let's put on an entrepreneurial strategy series and let's educate and empower people on at least three companies that we'll be featuring today that can help you advance your business, grow your business, organize your business, all the things that you heard about during the introductions that people are here for. My co-host is Peter because this was his brainchild and we're super excited to have him. But Peter, please take a few minutes and introduce yourself.
Yes, thank you very much, David, for putting this together, and thank everyone for attending. My name's Peter Camille. I'm calling him here in rainy New Jersey. Don't let my background fool you. And I work with startups a lot in the AI and Web3 space, working with growth stage companies, helping them boost productivity, cut costs, grow revenue, and delight their customers using AI. We've got a great panel this today. All people that I've worked with in the past. David, how do you want to handle the introductions to our panel?
Let's do that. I'm going to have the panelists introduce themselves. So we'll start with the lady first.
I am Bobby Mascara. I am as well in New Jersey. I'm from the Princeton area. I also am from Florida, so I'm from the Fort Lauderdale area. For those of you who winter down in Florida, I can see you down there. My background is in business management, computers, and education. So I've been training people to be entrepreneurs, computer technologists, any business idea or concept I have been working with to try to educate and grow companies. So I have a few companies under my belt. The one I'm going to talk to a bit later is AI FAQ, which basically the whole point of it is to have your frequently asked questions of your information available through an AI agent, which I'll talk about later. But I'm glad to be here and I can't wait to share the information and learn from the other folks as well.
Joey Seaman, how nice to see you, my friend. Hold on one second. Welcome. Can you let everybody know a little bit about, so Joey is our one of our three speakers as well. You can give us a little introduction. That would be awesome.
Sure. Hey guys, it was nice getting to know all of you a little bit. My name is Joey. I'm from New York originally, but I'm in Florida now, South Florida. And I run a company called Nova Echo AI. And we have an AI that sounds like a human and it makes sales calls for companies, which I'll talk about more later. But I'm excited to be here. So thanks for having me.
Joey, and last but not least, Jeff Garwood.
Good afternoon, everybody. So Jeff Gard out of Colts Neck, New Jersey. So born and raised in New Jersey. All my family's here, so that's kept me in this area. Basically, I lead the AI Factor, which basically work with companies on strategy development and basically taking their ideas and getting them ready to go to implementation. Basically, I'm out of what my prior companies were Salesforce at Blue Cross and also at Oracle. So I've seen big and small companies also through my mentoring. I do a lot of mentoring of startups. So seeing everything from the biggest of the big to smallest of small. And it's interesting today too, because we also do work with both for-profit institutions as well as mission-based organizations. So trying to drive both of those to basically help them execute better. And we'll be going through why take time to think about strategy matters today.
Awesome. Thank you, Jeff. Okay, so that's our panel. We want to get a little bit into the weeds as to what exactly is their technologies. That is definitely the point of this. Bobby, just get into it. By the way, just I want to let everybody know that if you have any questions, please put them in the chat, but there will be some time at the end for all of you to ask some questions. But if anything comes to you and you want to put it in the chat, please do. We are monitoring it. And if it's appropriate to ask, we will. But let's start with Bobby. Get into it. Tell us why.
Okay. So like I said, I have been educating people in business and technology for years. When blockchain came around, I built an association with Hyperledger, which is a Linux Foundation sponsored group of blockchain projects. I've been on the technical steering committee at the Linux Foundation for Hyperledger for 3 years. I'm not on it anymore, but I was for 3 years. And what that did was that gave me insight into the vast amount of information that Hyperledger and the Linux Foundation have. And one of the working groups I chaired was the documentation working group. So I don't know if you know anything about Hyperledger or the Linux Foundation. Under the Hyperledger umbrella, there's like 8 or 9 different blockchains. There's a couple of tools, a couple of libraries, and they all have their own way of documenting and training. So the first working group I was in charge of was to try to figure out how to organize the documentation. And that happened around the same time that AI came out, and it was a complete perfect marriage. So we got a group together, and now we have a project with Peter, who's one of the co-founders, and a gentleman named Gianluca. And we have an open source project under the Linux Foundation Decentralized Trust called AI FAQ. And what that is a way to get your data out of, or get data conclusions from the information you already have. So it's basically using chatbots and autonomous agents to get things done. So let's just, I'll show you what that looks like in a second. This is the quote that kind of really spurs us on, ignites our interest and passions, and keeps us going. So I'm just going to read this out loud. I'm not going to read anything else, but just this quote. So if data is the new oil, then the LLMs are the environmentally friendly fracking rigs blasting value from the unstructured shale formations. So again, pools of data. How do we get that untapped value out in an easy, not complicated way? So, you know, the answers are chatbots. And here's how they work. So most chatbots, everybody's used chat GPT at least once, or some not knowing some kind of AI agent that has helped you complete a task. Here, what we do at AIFAQ.pro is we have an LLM and in the background. So it is just like if you're questioning ChatGPT or Minstrel or Claude or whatever backend LLM you want, we have that. And then what we do is we take your private data and then we combine it, we load your private data and build your knowledge base. So basically, you're using the powerful ChatGPT products as well as tapping into your data. And then once that knowledge base is built, you can deploy this as FAQ chatbots on your website or in your training videos or however you need people to get this information. You could put an agent there that will help answer their questions so they don't have to search through volumes and volumes of information. So building that knowledge base is interesting because it's already out there. So our product, you can load HTML files, you can load videos, you can load LinkedIn profiles, you can load all of this information, build your own knowledge base, and then query it. The potential benefits from this are that your information isn't getting thrown up in the world and not know what you do with it. You build your knowledge base. It's your knowledge base. No one else can get at it and get at your information, which then brings you to the next step of drawing valid conclusions on your information with the help of advanced LLM models, so you can get the right answers. And we do this in a private and secure data, a private and secure way. So your data comes into this AI FAQ system, you build the knowledge base, you give people permissions to use it, on different levels. And I can explain that if I have time soon. So once you have that information built in that knowledge base, you can deploy the chatbots. You can personalize who sees the information. Like for instance, Founders Institute, Don was on the call earlier and mentioned that he runs this entrepreneur incubator, which we went through and was very successful. But now they're one of our clients. So what they need is different levels of permission on their knowledge bases that they build. So for instance, if you want to join the Founders Institute, those are general questions. You should be able to go to their website, ask the general question, and our chatbot will give you like distinct, perfect answers, like when the program starts, how much it costs, what's the refund policy, that kind of information. The next is for the people who join the program, who become the entrepreneurs in training, so to speak. And they need information on, is my pitch deck good? Can the Founders Institute show me people who could help me build my product better? Those kind of questions. And then Don, who is the administrator for Founders Institute, his permissions give him the ability to load the data that knowledge base was built on, as well as query it to questions about where are we doing, where is Founders Institute doing the best? Where are we getting more clients on their way to get investors and get their, you know, so it can ask intelligent meta questions as well. So there's different ways you can deploy this and get it into your system. And we're here to help you do that. It's a new product. So we're always looking for help. We have, again, it's an open source product at the Linux Foundation. Anyone can copy the code and come join us. We look forward to more collaborators as well as clients. So if you go to our website, which I'll put in the chat, AIFAQ.pro, there's a form there. You could just leave a comment with your email and let us know what you're interested in with us, and we'll get back to you and hopefully work together. So yeah, that's what we're working on.
Awesome, Bobby. Thank you. There was something that you wanted to maybe get into a little bit more. You have some time if you want to get into it now.
Let me stop sharing my screen. Actually, I was just basically, we're moving, the way the product is moving is that we're going to be utilizing agents as well. So not only will you be able to have people ask questions of your information, get valid answers, but maybe take the next step, like create an Excel document every time somebody, you know, asks these questions, or, you know, whatever it is, book sales calls, you know, the agents are what's going to take our product to the next level. But right now, the main secret sauce, so to speak, is the fact that your data is private. It's not getting, right now, if you want to ask LLM a question and you want your data to be used, you put it up there, it's gone. It's not your data anymore. It's everybody's data now. Where this keeps it private and secure, and then the permissioning levels will give you the ability to let certain people have access to information and have certain people the ability to build that knowledge base. And again, it is simple. It is a matter of just like a Word document, attaching an HTML, uploading a YouTube video, and that builds your knowledge base for you. So yeah, that's it.
I just wanted to add beyond that, some other things we've talked about on the product roadmap are things like connecting to your existing enterprise data. So we're working, for example, on, hey, how to connect to Snowflake, for example, or how do you make the data more personalized? So, hey, if someone comes back to the AI agent, it already knows their customer support questions, the types of products they've been buying, and now it can deliver more personalized experience. It knows what kind of software you're building. So, hey, it'll help, you know, write that code and do things like that. So we're starting with the basics, but I think there's plenty of opportunities to get really advanced.
Yeah. And just to piggyback on what Peter said, like we started with the Linux Foundation and the blockchains under Hyperledger, and it can do coding for, so it gets to, it learns a little bit about the programmers and the developers and their types of questions and their types of codes, and then gears the answers to specifically attack those problems.
Hey, great. Thank you. Thanks, Bobby. Thanks, Peter. Dan Pace, I don't know if you want to take this, actually, before we jump to Joey, Bobby and Peter.
Yeah. So right now, the LLM that's being used, I believe, is Mistral. And so that's an open source one. but there's plans in the future to allow people to select whatever LLM they want.
Okay, great. Yeah,
use the one that's best suited for your use case.
I was just actually more wondering, how do you keep it from going to Mistral servers? Like, is there some sort of firewall that it's built behind? But I guess an open source, that's possible. As they choose their own, though, that's a lot harder.
Well, the code is open source. So you could help us develop it, or you could just copy the code and develop it on your own. That's basically the whole idea of open source. But the private piece is that you're building your knowledge database on your systems. You're not, it doesn't follow back up to ChatGPT or Minstrel or whatever backend LLM you're using. It stays on your site. And you can redo that knowledge base anytime. You can save that knowledge base for few, but it never leaves your private systems. It's stored on your side. It's on your side of the firewall. It's definitely your stuff. So you're just actually using the information that the LLMs already have to enhance your questions on your information. I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, I guess we need to see an architect. Architected.
Joey, tell us a little bit more about Nova Echo. Maybe give us a demo or anything you can share. That would be awesome.
Certainly. Hey, guys. So Nova Echo is a voice AI platform, and we built an AI that sounds just like a human, and it can, it can make outbound sales calls and take inbound customer service calls over the phone for companies. So we've been using this in a lot of different industries to help with calling new leads that come in instantly, and then also doing large outbound campaigns and doing customer service. So for example, if we have a real estate agent that wants to call a lot of leads, they can throw 10,000 leads in the system, and within a day, our AI can call everybody and can book appointments over the phone or live transfer calls to another human representative to close that deal, or at least get to the next step. That other use case would be if somebody's selling SaaS services, for example, they could do an ad, and as soon as somebody comes in from that ad as a lead, the AI could instantly call that lead and pitch them on the services, answer questions, and then also either book them into an appointment or live transfer, or just send them a payment link with information so that they can pay on the spot with low ticket products. And then the third use case for customer service is using an inbound agent. So you can have a number you can put on a website, on an ad, whatever, and somebody could call it, and then the AI will pick up and answer any questions they may have, and can also perform actions just like the other kinds of agents. So I will quickly show you guys what the platform is capable of doing, and then I'll show you a quick demo of it actually working and talking live. So this is within the platform. So I'll just quickly run through it. We have phone numbers. So here you can buy phone number in a bunch of different countries and pretty much any area code that you'd like. You just press purchase or like a dollar. Then over here, we have agents. So you can create an outbound or an inbound agent. I'll do outbound for the sake of the demo. There's over 35 languages, including multilingual, but I'll stick with English for now. This is the first thing that the AI is going to say when it calls somebody. It's the opening message. So I'm just going to leave it simple. Hey, Daniel. And this can become a variable as well. Then we have a bunch of different voices that can be chosen from, and we can also clone voices for some clients. We have the calendar booking, as I spoke about, books on Google Calendar, Outlook, CRM systems, whatever you need. We have the call transfer, and then we have double calls. We'll call people twice in a row to increase pickup rates. We have some sensitivity options, and then we have the prompt. And this is where the AI is actually given all the instructions that it needs in order to make the calls. We have some pre-made prompts here. We also create prompts for clients, and clients will sometimes do it themselves or use our AI that creates prompts to create a prompt. And this is a pretty quick process to get a basic agent going. Then we have campaigns where we can see all of the analytics. So all the calls that went out, the spend, the minutes used, calls, answers, no answers, did not connect, transfers, and appointments. And we can see the percentage of all of these compared to how many calls were made, and the cost of all compared to the spend. And then lastly, I'll show you, we have call logs and recordings. So you can see every single call that went out, all the transcripts, and this can all be downloaded as well. So let me just call the AI. I'll do an inbound call real quick, and then you guys will be able to hear what it sounds like live. So hopefully this demo goes well, so we know how that goes.
Nova Echo, how can I help you?
Doing good. Can you tell me a little bit more about what Nova Echo can do?
Absolutely. Nova Echo is a cutting-edge conversational AI designed to enhance sales and customer service by making over 100,000 calls per hour. It's perfect for businesses looking to streamline communication and improve efficiency. What specific needs do you have in mind?
I want to know how much it costs.
Nova Echo is very inexpensive compared to other companies in the conversational voice AI space. I'm not allowed to discuss exact pricing, but you can reach out to our team and they would be happy to explain the different plans we offer. Would you like to know more about its features?
Yeah, you can tell me a little bit. I was curious about the live transferring specifically.
It seems like you might be asking about a different feature, but Nova Echo offers great capabilities for handling calls seamlessly, including call transfers and intelligent routing. This allows your customer service representative to focus on more complex inquiries while Nova Echo efficiently manages the routine tasks.
Well, I have a question.
Looking for?
I have a bunch of people on a webinar right now. What's one thing you would tell them about Nova Echo?
I would tell them that Nova Echo can revolutionize their customer interactions by making over 100,000 calls per hour, allowing businesses to engage with more clients.
So there's the demo. You get the point. And that can be given more complex instructions so that it can have calls. That was a minute and a half, but it can have calls up to 40 minutes in some cases if it's prompted correctly. So that was a simple prompt for demo use cases, but they can get complex. Yeah. So
just to give some examples, like I've tested this by giving simple prompts like, hey, you're calling alumni for Xavier High School and want to ask for a donation. And it's been able to, like, with just that simple prompt, like, answer questions about, like, hey, how are the funds going to be used? And, like, it can get creative to where I've created agents to say, hey, I created a fake agent that I'm, like, running for mayor of Sayreville, New Jersey. And, you know, like, have people call and ask me about my campaign and my platform. And it's able to hold, like, real conversations. So the thing that's really interesting about this is that, you know, the AI agents can do that menial work and they're always available. They never get tired or sick and can, you know, do it for, you know, a fraction of the cost. Like, Joey, can you sort of, you know, maybe give some, you know, other examples of where people have seen these kinds of benefits?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, it's a variety of industries. We've seen a lot of SaaS, a lot of e-com, a lot of insurance, real estate, but people will often have either no team and they want to start a sales team or start a customer service team because they can't handle it anymore, or they'll already have a decent sized team that's just really expensive and inefficient. Because you'll notice if you're trying to build a sales or customer service team that appointment setters and customer service reps often churn very quickly because they don't love their job because it's just repetitive. It doesn't feel like it's fulfilling typically. Customer service, arguably, maybe, but it's also very hard because you have people screaming at you nonstop. So there's a lot of negatives there that the AI doesn't feel. It's not a negative for an AI because it doesn't have human emotion, which is great in some cases. So what we want to do is we want to use the AI for that beginning portion where it can set appointments, it can do the customer service, it can save people time, and then we can promote all the people to higher level tasks where they can be doing more important customer service and they won't have people screaming at them and it'll actually feel fulfilling. And they can be doing closing calls where they'll make more money and actually be helping people rather than just, you know, annoying people or so they think to try to get them to, you know, book an appointment. So that's a main use case. And then also it can save businesses, you know, 50, 60, 70, sometimes 80% on their costs, depending on how many reps they have, because they save more at scale because it's very inexpensive and you don't have to pay it any commissions.
And so what Joey demoed to you was the Nova Echo 1.5 version, which to me sounds really human. I love how it can actually hold a real conversation. This is not your grandfather's chatbot or IVR system of press one for that. You know, give people a little update on what you see coming in the 2.0 version.
Yeah, so 2.0 should be coming out within the next couple of weeks. We're just fixing some last couple things up. And we're going to be releasing a lot of new features with that platform. So I will talk about some of them. One is that we're going to give people a lot more control over how fast AI responds, how fast or how long it will wait on silent before it hangs up, how many milliseconds you want it to wait after someone's done talking before it starts talking. So you'll be able to adjust everything. This is more than that. You'll be able to adjust everything on a granular level so that you can make the AI agent exactly how you want it. Right now we have like low and high options on sensitivity. We want to give people full control. So that's a big thing for us. Another thing is we're going to add knowledge bases. So instead of just putting text inside of the prompt with questions and answers, we're going to be able to create a knowledge base and connect that to PDFs, to websites, maybe even to Google Drive folders in the future. And it will be able to pull in data and use it during the call seamlessly, even if you have a lot of it. And third, this is the last thing I'll touch on. Later on, we're going to be adding a system that will allow us to have the AI remember all past calls, which opens up a ton of new use cases. I think that is gigantic because whenever you have a customer service call, if somebody calls back a couple days later and they have a similar question, the AI is going to answer in a similar way and it's going to piss them off because, you know, you already gave that answer and it didn't work. So now the AI will be able to remember all of that so that it can give better answers consistently. And with sales, it can feel like it's a one-on-one connection versus just an AI that's calling you repeatedly, right? And then I also saw a question in the chat real quick. You don't need a ton of data. So we've made scripts that are 20 pages long that work great. And we've made scripts that are 3/4 of a page long that work great. So if you put it in correctly, you don't need a ton of it. It's also connected to the internet. So it has a ton of data that's just available to everybody. So unless your business is very nuanced, it will probably know a lot about it already.
Yeah. So to add to that, the current version, like all of it sort of goes into the script, but we're working on, you know, allowing you to connect to other data sources. So it'll automatically know information about your products, your website, your explainer videos, etc. And anything you want to expand or add to that in terms of data sources?
We're going to be adding as many as possible. That's all I'll say. So we'll make it so that no matter where you store your data, you'll be able to have the AI be trained on it. That's the goal.
Cool. So think about that. Your CRM, your enterprise systems, your HR systems. That could be really cool.
Okay, perfect. Thank you guys. That was awesome. I'm sure people want to know more for sure, but there'll be time a little bit later. Let's go to Jeff.
So before we get started, I actually want to ask everybody to put in the chat, and unfortunately, I can't see the chat too readily. What is strategy? If you can give me one word for what you think strategy is, or what a sentence of what strategy is, and then Peter, David can help me out if people are putting some things in there. In the meantime,
we see a plan.
A plan.
Tactics.
A plan.
Vision.
Plan, tactic. Vision. Okay. So.
Practical.
You got things to, what was the last one?
Practical.
Practical. Practical. That's a good segue here to the word. So strategy is sometimes a bad word, right? It can be too lofty. It can be unattainable. It can be very obscure. People spend a lot of time sitting around doing strategy, right? So I asked ChatGPT, when is it used correctly or what is incorrectly associated with strategy? And things like goals. So lofty goals. I want to be the biggest this. Tactic. I'm going to go tackle this market, right? I have a grand vision for what I'm going to do. So at its core, strategy, and we're going to basically go through some very specific process, and I'll show you a little bit of some low-code stuff that we've done to help with that. But at the end of the day, it's picking out what your unique advantage is, what you uniquely bring, right? A very extreme focus. I like this one guy's podcast a long time ago. Was focus on success. So you're basically narrowing down. It's going to have to make hard choices. You're going to have to not do a lot of things, and then it's a practical thing of how to get there, right? So that's great, right? So that's kind of the big picture of it. So what is the approach that we're taking on our side? One is there's a lot of good strategy books out there. I have a bookshelf full of strategy, and we use a lot of them. But I really like this one book, Good Strategy, Bad Strategy. It basically says there's three key things. One is the diagnosis, which is what are you really solving? The guiding policy is kind of the why behind what you're trying to solve, and does it align to what you as a company are trying to do, big or small? And then what are those coherent actions you're going to take to do that? And bad strategy is goals, right? So it's, I want to be the biggest this. Well, that's, you know, a very lofty thing, but how do you actually get specific about what you want to narrow down to? And the thing that, you know, we bring a little uniquely to the equation is we combine that strategy with AI strategy. So our founder wrote a bestseller called The AI Factor. And the goal of that book, let me just write this down so I can see slide a little better, is that we're bringing AI specific elements to it of data and organizational readiness, the AI capabilities and your use case prioritization. How do you drive and align value from that? A roadmap and implement and measure, right? So basically combining those two pieces to bring those together to help you define the next steps. So kind of a long list, but I'm only going to pick on a couple of these. The number one thing, and whether it's with companies we're talking to, startup from everything from Columbia University I do mentoring with to other startups, defining what you're trying to solve is sometimes the hardest thing. I'm going to give you a couple examples, right? If you're doing a little bit of what Joey's doing with call center optimization, are you actually just trying to reduce call times? Is it a volume thing? Is that where your differentiator is? Or is it really solving for an effortless experience that'll make them more sticky with you? It might be a little bit of both, but really narrow down what's that thing you're trying to do. I'm going to give you a little more lofty one. There was one client that they basically did condo renovations and restorations. So a lot of these condos now have to get certifications, right? They have to certify that they're meeting code after that Florida collapse a long time ago. So there's a lot more push on that. So when they went through the process, originally they were doing it in mind of how do they just do their business the way they were doing it. Along the way, they hit a point, they're like, holy mackerel. And I'm like, yeah, let me guess, it's the long-term contracting. And they're like, yeah. And I'm like, okay, so let me review. And he's like, I'm not sure we should really be doing that though. And I said, look, how about this? You're the low bidder now. You're the low bidder every time, right? He's like, yeah. I said, that's no fun, right? Like, no. I said, and who's holding the financing for all these expensive renovations? It's not you guys, right? He's like, no. And I said, okay, the last twist, if you have a long-term relationship and now you have the data, you may put a 3 times more expensive railing in, knowing you're not going to send 2 workers 5 years from now to go replace it again, right? So you now have the data and you can drive those outcomes. So literally that's more of a transformational thing. So his target literally shifted to where they were originally at. The other one I'm going to point out is, you know, it's kind of the normal stuff, reducing friction points. It's, you know, do we have the staff training? So there's this idea of fuel and friction, right? People tend to throw fuel and drive faster and drive more. Oh shoot, I meant to start my timer. I forgot. So somebody keep me on track here. If I get too off, I'll keep it moving though. Is that one of the things, a friction point that I've seen again and again, strangely, is policy, right? So the policy of the company to create the conditions for people to use the AI itself, right? So strangely, that policy document or the permission to do it is one of the biggest sticking points. So one thing I'm going to point out is on this and the other slide I'm going to show you in a bit, those are opportunities for each of us as entrepreneurs to help go solve some of this stuff, right? So any one of these points can use help out there to basically do that. So to tie back to what we're saying with good strategy based, it really comes down to what's the underlying thing we're trying to solve. How does that align to either the mission we're trying to drive, it's a mission-based organization, or the financial outcomes we're looking to do? And how does that fit our overall business? And then what are those actions we're going to do it? I'm going to throw in one last one. So this come up again and again. Is AI the actual answer to solve it, right? So an AI first or product first mentality, we've seen a lot of companies like, hey, maybe it's just a workflow, right? Maybe that's the thing we need to solve. It's not even an AI workflow, it's just a workflow. So really taking apart the thing and figure out the job to be done that's really needed to be done. And then what are the tools that and the capabilities that are out there to solve that? All right. So we talked to a lot of companies from big to small. And some of the things that really popped up, I selected a few of these that really we see again and again. One is that everybody's in the same boat. Only a few big companies have a lot of AI maturity. And even then, a division has it. Many don't. So there's a lot of opportunity out there because most people are just getting started. The other thing is this proliferation of POCs. There's a ton of POCs out there, and a lot of companies need help guiding those to basically being some organized thing that will actually drive production level outcomes. We see a lot of that. Another big opportunity area is data readiness, right? So I'm going to combine that with what Bobby was talking about with the internal knowledge repository. The need to clean up and rationalize your data and create an internal domain-specific knowledge base is a huge area that companies are really just starting to tackle still. Give you a really quick example. One that was eye-opening for me was one company, they did a lot of regular data readiness and cleaning and that kind of stuff. Well, what they found was they had multiple divisions, and what a piece of paper was called, because they do a lot of cardstock printing, was called something different in three divisions. And just it's not even just metadata. It's like, what is something? Defining that a cardstock for this purpose is this, they could then do combined purchasing. They could use the AI to route work to a division that already had the cardstock sitting there, just called something different, right? So basically rationalizing that data as a underlying enabler for AI is huge.
I want to add to that, Jeff, real quick. Sure. So we've even seen that with AI FAQ, where we've been setting up stuff for Hyperledger or for Foundry Institute, and we're testing things and saying, oh, I don't like that answer. And it's because of the quality of the data that we loaded into it. So
for sure,
that is a really important step. And, you know, as someone who's done a lot of business process reengineering, it's people, processes, and technology. But the fourth factor now is the data. And if you're putting garbage in, you're getting garbage out. So great point.
Yep. And, you know, and I think that domain knowledge is becoming more and more critical. So what Joey's doing to connect to internal data sources too, right? You will have your own internal repository and your own domain specific knowledge. That's where a lot of the gold for some of these bigger, you know, mid-sized companies, though they have that already. They're just not working that into their AI effectively. So how to bridge that. Last point is, I'm going to pick on this one. If anybody has any, they want me to talk to, I can. But a lot of shadow AI out there. There's always shadow IT, right? People are going to use it whether you allow them to or not. It's just the reality. The companies that I've seen doing it best are creating safe lab environments. They're setting up a policy. They're setting up a lab to basically have constrained access where, you know, it's contractually and physically set up with OpenAI to not train it. You know, or some of the other tools, they're letting their people work and experiment in a controlled way versus an uncontrolled way. And that also tackles the POC thing, because then they can harvest some of those things and figure out what things they're going to put into a corporate level type environment. So anything else on that one before I move?
Mm-hmm. So I was sort of curious, question for David around that. Are you seeing companies come to you and say, hey, we need help developing an AI policy?
Yeah, definitely. I think I thought maybe we'd get into that a little bit later, but we can do it now if you want.
No, we can save it for later, but I would like to come back to this topic, because I think, you know, you're seeing this at corporations, you're seeing this in schools saying, hey, you know, the kids can't use AI. And it's like, you know, the genie's out of the bottle. You're not going to put it back. You need smart policy, not stick your head in the sand.
Yeah. We should definitely get into the the ethical and responsible obligations we have to use AI. But Jeff, please finish up.
Sure. So one of the things that we did, and I can show a quick demo depending on the time we have, is we created a workbench to basically mechanize from start to finish the process of going from your background information, all the demographics and things like that, where your strategic focus is. The book has a unique thing of what your focus is, whether you're optimizing, innovating, and that drives the AI in the tool as well. And then where are you going to invest? Is it just operations? Is it customer action, strategic? Is it just one of the first areas we tell companies to start is developer efficiency, right? The 30%+ uplift they're getting from these AI tools in the developer community is a huge place to start. It's a good place to start safely to build your own internal governance and policies too, right? So it's a little more internal facing, but it gives them a starting point to actually start to build those other things that they can apply to the rest of their business. And then things like the business model canvas, I'm sure you're all familiar with. And last piece is basically how we map out, what are you trying to solve? What are the specific areas? What's the approach you're going to take? And then the value potential you can drive from it. So a little bit toward those, you know, alignment things we were talking about earlier. And I'll just say, if you reach out to us, we, you know, small but nimble group, and we have a really good relationship with other companies too that we can bring in depending on where the solution fit is. So feel free to reach out for that. And if anyone would like, I'm going to put this in the chat as well, my contact. But if anybody, do we have time for a quick demo of the workbench creator?
Yeah, I think you do.
Got a few minutes.
Do a little demo, please.
Sure. I'll do a quick and I'll tell you what the
As someone who uses a lot of frameworks, I like how Jeff has taken proven processes around, you know, just regular strategy, added the AI element, and now productized this into an actual workbench to guide people through this process.
So you see my desktop okay, Pete?
Yes.
Okay, great. So what I'll start with is this was built in Replit, one of the low-code AI tools. I have to say it's both amazing and astoundingly frustrating at the same time. But what it's going to be in a year is going to be mind-boggling. So I haven't coded in a very long time. I've managed a lot of developers over the years. And you do have to think like a developer. I could do a whole session just on this, or feel free to reach out. But I'll just give you a quick tour of some of the pieces. And I'm actually doing an update to put the responses API in from OpenAI, if anybody's familiar with that. So basically what we build is a whole workbench of both front-end stuff all the way to the back-end things that I need to manage the people, the roles, what roles they have, you know, so all those pieces. But we can base the simple stuff is the demographics, right? So putting in your tech landscape, your business, your goals, all that. There's the quadrant, power quadrant I mentioned, where you can basically rate your power quadrant items and what your strengths are. And if you see like all this again, basically dynamic updates. And if you flip the interpretation flips, like just flip there. Had a great question from a customer. They were like, okay, that's who I am, but that's who I want to be. So we gave it an ability to say what you want to be so that you shift the forward analysis to give you recommendations that are more aligned to where you want to be. Talked about the business model canvas here. So being able to edit and create that. And it's still like the fun stuff with the low code stuff. One thing I was working on this and I'm like, you know, everything from quick wins to street, I'm like, man, these little boxes are really annoying to edit in. So in an hour, I'm like, I just talked it into doing this, right? I want it to pop out. I want it to pop back. And the last one I just added is a Kanban where now they can basically take and dynamically prioritize and rank as they're going through the analysis stages, what is the most viable things that match their business. So that's the thing there.
So this is exciting. So Jeff's not a programmer by trade. He's done some development, but I'm curious who else here has played around with low code, no code tools to, play around and build some proof of concepts or, you know, even production level apps.
While you're doing, I'll show one last thing, Pete, and then I'll stop. So the other thing is to Bobby's theme, right? So I have it internal to the application where we created the embeddings for a bunch of documents, right? So the book itself, the AI factor, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And when the system is doing inquiries, we're using that embeddings as the RAG grounding. And basically the documents that are relevant and the relevancy scores are able to be shown. And so it basically feeds the rest of the application as well. So again, all of that with zero code. So it's been, but again, it can go off into la la land sometimes, but what you can do is pretty wild. And I'll pause there.
Okay, great. Thanks to all three of you. I think what we just want to do now is maybe bring up some topics that are sometimes of interest when we're talking about artificial intelligence. I've had some people kind of chat me personally also. I think we need to kind of get into it a little bit. So just from all of your perspectives, there's no right or wrong answer here. And of course, I have to ask this. I mean, I am an intellectual property attorney. I am a computer scientist. And so I have been, you know, filing patents on large language models and artificial intelligence for many companies for many years, even before AI was a thing or was a thing in the current vernacular, if you will. And so what, and again, it's not just about patents, it's about branding and trademarks and copyright, stuff like that. Can you share a little bit, each of you, as to where you have protection on some of these programs and agents and bots and all that, if you have any, if not, why? And Bobby, we'll start with you.
Okay, well, I come from a different angle completely. I come from open source. So all the code is available for anyone to look at, play with, copy, and we encourage people to do that because when you improve the code, open source expects you to show the people who you got the code from to make that more robust and accurate. So open source is a little different than proprietary companies that keep their tech proprietary. The private part is that, again, the system itself is building your private knowledge base for your company, your enterprise, even yourself, to keep that information private. So the tech isn't proprietary on AI FAQ. It's open to everyone who wants to go to the GitHub repository, and I can drop that link in the chat anytime you want it. It's on our website. And we encourage people to take the code, walk through it, play with it, and bring back suggestions. So it's a little different between open source.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely the opposite of patents, but that's still, it's not, again, it's not just about patents, about trade secrets, trademarks, copyrights. Joey, what about you?
Yeah, we're probably going to focus on patents a little bit later. I don't think they have much use at the moment because of where we're at. We're still a startup. But as we grow, obviously we want to protect some of the new features that we're going to be adding that no other company is going to hopefully be able to add. But I mean, the game was just about staying ahead of the competitors. There's so many people that are trying to get into this space that if you can stay ahead, you're going to win regardless. And if we start doing the whole thing with patents, there's going to be, you know, 20 people trying to use a feature 6 months after we thought of it and created it, and it'll become a mess. So that's not my main focus. It'll be important once we get big though.
So Joey and David, what's your take on the ethical and legal issues around whether the AI voice, it sounds so human, should announce and present itself as, oh, I'm an AI? What's your ethical stance on that?
I think if there's sensitive information, it should say that it's an AI. Other than that, I don't think there's any moral stance that, in my opinion, that says that the AI would have to say that it's an AI. If it's asking about, you know, medical documents, or it's asking about a past experience that's very traumatic or whatever, let's say it's like a healthcare example, then it should say that it's an AI. But if it's trying to, you know, ask if you need like a toy duck or something because it's working with an e-com store, there's no reason why it should have to say it's an AI.
Jeff, what about you? Question two.
Yeah, very, very broad topic. So I think for kind of say what Lodi we're looking at and then what we've seen a little bit. So I think a lot of it is trademarking and just copyright for the most part. The interesting place where it gets interesting is, you know, the term wrapper app. You're basically putting an app on top of these AIs, right? And what does that really mean? And where does that intellectual property really start, right? So I'll give you an example, right? So if you look at what we do, we're taking a lot of prompts, a lot of workflow, a lot of unique logic on top of that. Where does that wrapper app's idea stop? Where does that intellectual property start? I guess that's a question back to you maybe there. I think we wrestled with that ourselves. Is at what point does that become so unique that you want to step that next level into doing something patentable if it's a very unique process? So I'll set that aside for one side. And then the other side is we see a lot is a lot of startups struggling with data and getting enough data. So one I was mentoring, they were doing like a skincare for people with colored skin. And because the diagnosis typically aren't as well refined, the science is well refined, the medication isn't as well refined. So they were struggling with data. So one of the things I basically was recommending was synthetic data, right? At least create a pile of synthetic data versus they were going to take a year and a half to go out there and do a bunch of POCs and experiments. I said, well, do both, right? So don't worry about the real data yet. Start with synthetic data, prove out a lot of your points. Then you could go take that next step because then you're going to deal with real data. So basically kind of navigating both the intellectual property and the data underlying it at the stage that's appropriate for you.
That's great. I think you bring up some good points. It's definitely for a whole nother session, but I think the three of you are a good kind of example of that intellectual property is a choice that every company makes. You know, you either are going to file a patent or not. You're going to keep a trade secret or not. You're going to file for a trademark or not. You know, you're going to try to protect something through copyright or not. Like at the end of the day, those choices are made by founders, but could also be made by your investors. And so some investors want that and some investors don't. Mm. But I think in this world, and somebody, there's again, the third time I'm seeing this, right now, just for everybody's knowledge, if you use artificial intelligence to create something for yourself that you eventually want to file a patent on and or file a copyright on today, as we exist today in 2025 under the laws of the United States, you can't do that. Intellectual property, a patent, a trademark, and copyright is created by a human being. That may change. I kind of think it should. I kind of hope it does. But right now, if you go to Bing Image Generator and create an image and try to file a copyright, no, it's not going to work, right? One, you won't have a copyright attorney who's going to do it for you. And the copyright office is going to ask you who created this. If you're not a human being, then you cannot get what you created with AI because that's an AI-generated image or an AI-generated invention or whatever. And so so keep that in mind for the few comments there. That's where we are now. We're not in Westworld. We're not yet in Terminator. We're not yet there yet. Where artificial intelligence has rights and emotions and gets the same respect as a human inventor. We could be there one day, but we're not there now. So
I'm still afraid of Yul Brynner after that movie.
Yeah. Totally. We danced around some of the ethics and kind of responsibility that people have in using kind of artificial intelligence. What are all your takes on that, Bobby? We'll start with you because you hear that a lot. The response and there's been like a presidential order, right? Like President Biden, right before he left, he came up with his executive order of using AI responsibly. Right, without gender, without bias, without discrimination, things like that. There's that whole problem with deep fakes, and so there's this underlying theme of like, if you're going to use AI, you should try to use it responsibly and ethically. And so, what does that mean to the three of you? Again, there's no legal framework here yet. right? That same executive order that Biden created, the moment President Trump came into office, he deleted it. And so instead, his new AI edict is United States will be the most powerful nation in the world. Yes, the best in AI. Just so that you know, I read an article yesterday. Again, I know it's not all about patents, but China already has filed 300,000 applications on AI, patents on AI. The United States is only at 67,000. And so let's see who's jockeying for that position for sure. But Bobby, please, any comments on responsibility and ethics?
Well, for me, it was personal when AI first came out. I'm an author. I write courseware for the Linux Foundation. And I got scared. I mean, who needs me anymore? Like, you can just put an outline in and create a book, create a course, create a whatever. But I found that fear wasn't really justified, because people still, like you said, with the patents office, want to see the human behind it. They want to be able to point a finger at somebody who wrote that and say, what did you mean by that? Can you expand, you know, get more information? So as an author, it's terrifying. And I'm sure that's what's going on through Hollywood and the movie industry. And, you know, like, you can just, so where does the ethics come? What's right? Like, can I do my next course completely through a chatbot instead of taking 5 months to write it? Probably. Will it be as good? Hopefully not. I don't know. So I do think in certain circumstances, you must declare this was written by an AI. This was not written by a human, or this, you know, and I don't know how you enforce that. But personally, I feel that that's something that needs to have a policy behind or have a principle behind, because right now, I don't think there is anything that says, you know, I can do a whole library for my company, Ledger Academy, and not write a word. And that to me scares me. So again, it's so new and so open. I don't know really where that's going to fall in a policy perspective or how you govern and manage that piece. Or will it matter? Like, who cares if it's written by AI?
Right. Exactly. Joey.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, obviously there's a lot of ethical concerns and people are always going to disagree on that, because the more you do focus on putting all your energy into ethics and making sure it's all done right, you know, the slower you're going to grow. Typically, if you want to grow fast, you're going to make some mistakes along the way and it's going to get a little bit messy. So there's something to say on both sides, but I would say the options are either we could stop AI as a humanity, and everyone can keep doing exactly what they're doing and nobody has to worry about their job or anything like that. And innovation will also probably halt, or we could embrace AI and everyone's obviously going to have to change and do something new in some kind of way, because that's what happens every time big change happens. But if we do that in the correct way, we'll have a ton of innovation and hopefully humanity will be able to grow much faster than it ever has. So things are going to change. I don't think it's necessarily unethical for things to change as long as there's a better option on the other side. But I think people are more scared of change rather than actually scared of what's going to happen at the end.
Yeah, amen. That's a great answer. Awesome. Jeff.
All right. So I'm going to go down the bias side for a minute. So I volunteer for a group called Women Leaders in Data and AI. And this is a very hot topic there a lot. So I think what's tricky is it's hard to legislate in. It's more on awareness that it exists, right? You can't say, do this, and then you don't have bias, right? And I'm going to give you some examples, recent examples, right? Recruiting, you saw Workday is being sued, right? Because they're screening everybody over 40. So there's a bias in their recruiting screening. There was another one where, I'm just going to give you a few examples. One was, I think it was Amazon, was hiring programmers. So they looked at all the successful programmers. Well, guess what? 95% of them were women. So guess what the thing skewed to? It skewed out all the women applicants coming in. So knowing that that is there, things like, and this is more the other bias, which is if you only trust the historical view and don't look at it critically, right? The skin color startup I was working with is a good example. There is no data because it's already underrepresented, misdiagnosed, mistreated. You know, the treatments were not the appropriate ones for them. So if you rely on the historical data without judgment, it's more an awareness that you need to take a step back and think, are there gaps, right? Heart attacks in women, right? Underrepresented and underreported. So if you build your thing based on that, so I guess my point is that it's more everybody needs to take a step back when they're going in and be very critical of the historical leanings and undersampling or oversampling in their data, and just add that awareness to whatever you're doing going forward to try to, you know, all we can do is incrementally fix it. I don't think there's a magic way to do it. And again, for the one company, my last point, that's why I went with the synthetic data for them. I said, you're not going to get that data. It doesn't exist. You're going to have to create at least a representative sample to start and then test forward, right? So build your refinement going forward.
Joe, something you wanted to add to that or a question for Jeff?
Yeah, no, I thought that was interesting. With the bias portion, that made me think a little bit more, because I think a lot of people are worried about that specifically. And obviously in politics, that's a big thing because both sides are very biased. So everyone's trying to make sure that the AI is not going to become biased, but that's impossible because it's trained on human data. So I don't think that should be a huge... I'm wondering how to put this. I don't think that should be the main concern from people. I think people should more accept that it's going to be biased and realize that they shouldn't take everything it says with 100% certainty, rather than trying to make it not biased at all. Because whoever's trying to make it not biased is going to be biased doing that. Like, we see that everywhere. That's why Biden put something in and then Trump removed it and put something else in. So everyone that's going to try to make it, they did it. I believe they both did it for what they thought was a good cause. And everyone that tries to make it unbiased does for what they think is a good cause. But everyone has their own biases when they do that. So I think we should maybe not trust it 100%, but also not be so scared of its answers.
So it's sort of like that old Abraham Lincoln quote, don't believe everything you read on the internet.
It's just fine up until it becomes a healthcare decision, right? So I think there's some areas where it's a little clearer, right? It's not a judgment call. There's actually like factual outcomes. So I think there's a grayscale of, right? You know, kind of talking about political to, you know, views to medical outcomes, right? So I think that where you're on in that scale and the thing you're actually addressing is going to drive where how accurate or how goes, right?
I agree with that. Yeah. Something. I'm talking about more like I was focusing really on politics. So that's all mostly opinion. But yeah, for other things, there's just hard facts. You can't really argue. So I agree.
Okay. Yeah. But you got to realize that the models themselves are flawed. So again, like Peter and I were testing out AI FAQ a while back, and we programmed in someone's LinkedIn profile. And they graduated from Stanford. We asked to test it, where did they graduate from? Stanford. We asked where it went to school, and it had no information. So you're like, it went to Stanford. Like, you answered that question already. So again, what you're getting out of these chatbots, and that was one of the biggest models we asked that question of, and it came back wrong. So you gotta really look at what you're asking and the answers that you get.
And can I throw one more twist in? And this came up, we did a session at Wharton, their financial securities training session there. And I'll give a quick example. The lady was from wealth management, and she's like, we'll never use AI, right? I'm like, yes, you will. And she's like, no, our stuff is so governed and so this, right? So if you look at the biases and the ambiguities that come out of AI, it's going to be ambiguous. It's going to be different every time, right? But I think this is a Medium article or Substack I just wrote, is like, there are areas where risk is okay, right? If you look at life change events, who cares? You could be kind of right? You're looking, did they buy a house? Did someone die? Did they inherit money? But then you can go into the very tightly controlled governance space, which is very locked down and doesn't have that ambiguity, right? So I think it's like, we can have a little more risk and a little more openness or bias or whatever you want to call it here, as long as it gets to that govern constrain thing that's highly regulated, you still have all those controls, right? It's just informing it and then validating it on the second side, right? So it's like not a one or all either.
Okay. So I'd like to add to what you guys are saying about the data, which is, you know, these models are probably becoming already commoditized. And what sets them apart is the data. And so this goes back to sort of a legal and ethical issue of, well, if ChatGPT and all these models can say it's fair use to take all the data off the internet and to build our models, like, I think that's an unethical, illegal model, even if it's not considered illegal right now. I think we need to move to a model where people and organizations own and control their data. And if the model is using your data in that answer, you know, you should get some fraction of a percent of whatever people are paying to subscribe to that service. I think there needs to be a separation of the data from the model. And I think that kind of decentralized solution is better, because right now it's, you know, Microsoft, OpenAI, Google, Facebook, and the Chinese government own and control these AI models. And are those really the entities we trust to own and control this?
Yeah, those are good. That's a good point.
Mic drop.
No, I actually agree, Peter. Like, I agree with that. So, again, I think, to Bobby's point, I don't think we're there yet for a regulatory and ethical framework, but it's great to see that the three of you are, you know, kind of pushing forward regardless. That is the definition of innovation and entrepreneurship. And it's only companies like the three of you that are going to, you know, push the potential creation of regulatory and ethical frameworks. So bravo to you all. Let me give the three of you a final word, just in the interest of time. We are recording this. So after the call, all 1,200 registrants will get the video, and then this is also being recorded as part of our podcast, and will also be available on our YouTube site. But our three main speakers, can you just let us know where are you with the company? What do you need? How can people get in touch with you? How people could help. Let us know. Bobby, you first.
Okay. So for AI FAQ, right now we have, we're in the Linux Foundation open source, and every summer they run a mentorship program. And that starts on Monday. And on Monday, the four mentors who got accepted into the program start, and we're going to call them like managers. But so many other people are interested that they're joining the summer program. So I'm inviting everyone, if you're interested, we meet every Monday morning at 9:00. It's an open meeting. I'm going to put the website in the chat right now. And at the bottom of the homepage is a link to that Monday morning, 9:00 Eastern Daylight Time meeting. Again, and you can see where our development teams are. Our two projects are, one is multi-agents so that AI FAQ can do a lot more tasks. And the other one is to make a connection with that Snowflake, which is a huge company that does data lakes and data mining, to extract their value out of their data as well. I encourage everybody to come out and see what we're doing. And just one more thing, David, before I leave. When you were pronouncing the names, I had told Peter this previously. My son just graduated from the University of Delaware in engineering, and some of those names are like, they had an AI agent for the hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of graduates. They walked up to the stage, handed a card with a QR code. Their name, their major, their information was up here, and an AI agent, now I don't know, Joey will get a kick out of that, pronounced each name perfectly. Without a pause. It was amazing.
It's pretty cool.
And when you were struggling, I was like, you need an AI agent, voice agent.
Totally.
Where can we get that? But thank you for having me.
Thank you.
We're also looking to pilot other things. So if you have a chatbot for your data that you'd like to use internally or externally, reach out to us.
Absolutely. Yeah. We are looking for test customers. So.
Joey, please.
I will be sending a couple links in the chat. I'm trying to get them all together here, but we have obviously the AI system. So if you're a business and you want a demo, I'll put a link so you can book a demo call with somebody from our team. And then we also have an affiliate and partnership program. So we have right now, I think close to 60 people that are affiliates, and they will have a link And whenever they send it to somebody, that person can then go to our website through that link. And if they purchase any of our subscriptions, that person gets 25% of whatever they pay us on the subscriptions or set of fees. So if you're interested in that, I'll also put a link in the chat here. And our partnership program is a way for people to license our technology and then resell it. But that can also be talked about on the call if anybody is interested. So thank you for having me again. And I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys all do.
Thank you, Joey. Right.
Yes. Thanks, sir. All right. So thanks again for having me and all the rest of us. I would say I'll start with I'm biased, right? Strategy matters. So my advice is, you know, take the time to really think through what you're truly trying to solve. And are you aligning that with what financial or, you know, mission outcomes you're looking to do? So we all kind of race through life and we're kind of like, we run faster, we'll get there, right? So taking that step back once in a while and taking a really broad view can really help accelerate where you're going. I'll say also just get started, right? For those of you that haven't played with this stuff, the low-code stuff has been so eye-opening and so mind-boggling. I would say, you know, try it because what it's going to be in a year is going to be astounding. What it is today, and that goes for all the tools, right? So helping companies just kind of, you know, your clients or whoever you are or internally, just get started and try these things out. There's very low overhead to give them a go sometimes. And they're only going to get better, right? So getting used to it, getting used to creating those policies internally and comfort to use them would be my advice there. So thank you all.
Awesome. Thank you, Jeff, Joey, Bobby, Peter. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining. And do hope that you got something out of this. We will be back next month, same time, same place, same channel. So look out for some emails about that. Again, everybody, have an awesome start to the summer, and good luck to Jeff, Joey, and Bobby. And take care, everyone. Thanks so much. Bye bye.